Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
A lot of change is happening in Cuba. Relations with the U.S. are still tense, but the island is slowly opening up to the outside world. Just recently, a construction crew from Detroit was at Ernest Hemingway's home in Cuba. The Nobel Prize-winning author lived on a hillside overlooking Havana for 2 decades. And now there's an effort underway to preserve the manuscripts and artifacts that he left behind. Here in Now's Peter O'Dowd has the story from Havana.
Last month, I found myself navigating the busy streets of the Cuban capital, amazed by vestiges of the Cold War and a U.S. blockade, the mid-century Chevys and Buicks in various states of perfection or rusted decay. It's a city without Starbucks, without Uber, without any of the corporate brands that sell on nearly every other street corner across the globe. A city alive with open-air cafes and bars like this one, where, according to legend, a famous American writer loved to drink. The story goes that Ernest Hemingway downed mojitos here at the Bodeguita del Medio in Old Havana, and then walked a few blocks to the El Floradita, where he was known to swallow a dozen daiquiris or more in a single sitting. Hemingway was a regular at the Floradita bar for years, but I came to Cuba to see his home.
Hemingway was, for Cuba, a Nobel Prize.
Luis Enrique Gonzalez is my guide at Hemingway's house. The author called it Finca Vigia, the lookout house, on a hill overlooking the bustle of Havana. A stand of bamboo rustles outside Hemingway's study.
This is maybe the most important place. Why? Because we are now in the room of Hemingway, and we are now in front of that typing machine, that exactly typing machine where Hemingway wrote The Old Man and the Sea. You know, the book that gave to Hemingway the Nobel Prize. And here, finish the novel of On the Ball Tolls.
There's a lot of animals on the wall.
Yeah, Hemingway loved to hunt.
An impala, a water buffalo, a kudu's twisted antlers hanging in the dining room. In the bathroom, a faded list of numbers written on the wall.
It's because Hemingway used to check his wave 7 times a day in that scale, you know. And they write the width and the size on the wall, you know.
He was worried about being too fat.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe he should have had fewer than 12 daiquiris every day.
Yeah. And look at the, it's normal, I always say that it's normal if you have some magazines in the bathroom. But look at a lot of books in the bathroom.
Books on baseball, books on witchcraft, books on everything. 9,000 in all scattered around the house.
It's rustic. It's just a low 7-room bungalow, yet it's filled with everything that the author collected.
Mary Jo Adams leads the U.S.-based Finca Vigia Foundation. With help from the Cuban government, it's dedicated to preserving Hemingway's legacy on the island.
Well, he lived there from 1939 to 1960, one-third of his life, and it was really the only place where he put down roots. So as you walk through the house, you see letters from he wrote to his mother from summer camp in Michigan. You see trophies from when he was a little boy. It's where he collected things in trunks and brought them to Cuba. There's also a phonograph in the living room that still works, and occasionally the staff will put on albums of American gospel music, or one of his favorite things was opera. When those musical notes, you hear them in the air and you look out and you see the trees and the garden. And the house is as he left it. So it's as though he's just gone for a swim in the pool and is ready to come back.
That, you make an excellent point. Like much of Cuba, actually, that house appears to be frozen in time.
Yes.
Is that part of the allure?
I think it is part of the allure. Cubans had a lot of photographs of Hemingway living in his home, and we had a lot in the JFK Library in Boston, which has a very large, extensive Hemingway collection. We put our two groups of photographs together and saw that this was where he had his chair. This was where he liked to set up his bar. Mm. This was the painting that he always had over the dining room table, and this was his favorite crystal. So it really has a sense of on purpose of what it was like in the mid-50s when he lived there.
So give me a little more history then. He lived there in the 1950s, as you say, but he left in 1960. That was about a year after the Castro Revolution took hold in Cuba. But why did he up and leave the house?
Well, there are various stories or theories. His health was not good. And I was told that his fourth wife, Mary, really wanted him to go to Spain or take a trip. Maybe he would feel better, be less depressed. And they traveled a bit. She brought him back to Idaho. He went to a medical clinic and committed suicide while they were abroad.
Not long after he left the home in Cuba.
Maybe a year, maybe 9 months. I'm not certain of that.
Yeah. But at that time, then, the regime, the Castro regime, was in full effect. What was the relationship like between Hemingway's wife? Did she want to get his personal belongings back to the United States? Because at that point, the relationship had broken down between the two countries.
It had broken down. But what I understand is that Mrs. Hemingway enlisted the help of Mrs. Kennedy to retrieve some of her husband's personal effects and...
And that's the First Lady, Mrs. Kennedy.
Exactly. She had a great Mrs. Kennedy had a great respect for the arts, for culture, and for Ernest Hemingway.
Ultimately, many of his belongings never made it back to the United States. The Cuban government took over the house and everything in it. They turned it into a museum. But time and the weather were hard on what was left of the author's legacy in Cuba. In 2005, the National Trust for Historic Preservation called the home one of America's most endangered historic places.
I first went there as a termite expert. And
I remember fact, that.
That's home renovation TV star Bob Vila. He's on the foundation's board, and he got on the phone to join my conversation with Mary Jo Adams.
It had an unusual double set of roofing on it that was being redone. All the windows had rotted out, and they were making new wooden casement windows on site.
Vila and the foundation helped renovate the home. They also began a project to preserve the manuscripts, letters, and photographs on site. They got permission to bring U.S. tools and materials onto the island. And just last week, a team from Detroit was there to work with Cuban architects and engineers. They're building a sealed vault so the preserved artifacts will last for generations.
What we did specifically was design this building simply. It's 2,400 square feet. And Cuba is, as a nation, is so rich in culture. Yet all of the museums in Cuba have the same problem of sunlight, humidity, termites, pests. And so lessons learned at the Hemingway Museum can be extended throughout all of the provinces in Cuba. And although we don't intend to build buildings throughout the country, the architectural drawings, the plans, the materials list are available for the Ministry of Culture to work with if they choose to build more of these special museum-quality archival storage facilities with laboratories.
Well, as you know, the Trump administration has rolled back some of the Obama-era policies that opened the U.S.-Cuba relationship after so many years of tensions. How have you been able to navigate this project through the sensitive geopolitical concerns of the two countries?
Well, we've worked through several administrations over the past 14 years, and we do it, I think, rather successfully because we are not political. We always talk about Ernest Hemingway being a citizen of the world. Hmm. So what you find at Finca Vejia are documents from Spain, from Africa, from the United States, from Cuba, from Mexico. Both governments have seen that, which I think is a credit to Ernest Hemingway. I wonder what he would think about that.
And the spirit of the effort does resemble Hemingway's relationship to the Cuban people. Back at Finca Vejia, my guide, Luis Enrique Gonzalez, says he grew up a few blocks from here, listening to stories from his grandmother, who came to the house as a girl to eat mangoes.
The Hemingway opened the gates to this huge house to all the kids, to all the neighbors that want to go here.
And Gonzalez says he did it because the Finca Vejia is where the American writer felt at home.
He always say that he speak Cuban, he not speak Spanish. And he say in that occasion, yo soy un cubano sato. That means I'm a regular Cuban, you know. And for the Cuban people, that American guy came to Cuba, decided to live in Cuba, and feel like a Cuban, in that difficult moment that Cuba were living, was like a gift.
Just like the legacy of his home in Cuba is today. For Here and Now, I'm Peter O'Dowd.